time to get started. Everyone will take their seats and we'll have roll call.
Commissioner Gilliland, Councilmember Handy Peters, Mayor Pro Tem Matusik,
here.
Commissioner Nibbitt,
here.
Councilman Emter,
here.
Commissioner Curry,
here.
Vice Mayor McGurk,
here.
Mayor Kelly,
here.
Councilmember Ford,
here.
Vice Mayor Long,
here.
Councilmember Daniels, Councilmember Patterson,
here.
Councilmember Denny's,
here.
Councilmember Cusack,
here.
Councilmember Northey, Councilmember Wagner, Commissioner Basso, Mayor Sowell,
here.
Councilmember Saylor,
here.
Councilmember Perrone,
here.
Mayor Jennings, Mayor Gibson,
here.
Mayor Ardell,
here.
Commissioner Shute,
here.
Linda Costello is excused. Clay Irvin is excused. Gillis Blaze,
here.
And Bob Stork,
here.
And we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Will you all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, this is the time for public comments. We do have one speaker, John Ursland, if you would step up and speak. 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'm John Ursland. I'm the chairman of the Daytona Beach Shores Pedestrian Safety Committee, and I was a little disappointed, I think many of us were in the Shores, a little disappointed to know that the feasibility study financial grant had gone from what we anticipated was $50,000 down to $20,000. Now, the creation of a safe environment for pedestrians and bicycles in the Shores is of critical importance to our economic development. And what we're afraid of is that because it is our main street, State Road A1A, that the highway department may have a mindset that this road is nothing more than a roadway to move traffic. And nothing could be farther from the truth. It is our main street, and we have to make it, we would hope that the engineering firm that does the safety study eventually, we'll start with a clean sheet and think of all ways to make it safe for our visitors, our residents, and our tourists. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much. Any other speakers from the public? Okay, we'll go right on to the consent agenda. And are there any changes, or do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the
consent
agenda.
Okay, second. Rob, second. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against? Okay, it has passed. All right, now we have, this is a marathon meeting. We have 10 action items, which I think breaks the record. So let's, and most of them have to do with the change to river to sea. So we'll go ahead and get started with the first one. Review and approval to complete the execution and filing of the interlocal agreement for the creation of the River to Sea Transportation Planning Organization. Lois?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. As you pointed out, really the first seven items under the action items section are all related to the expansion of the planning area. The first three items are the documents that are required to A, create the organization, B, to access planning funds, and then C, to ensure that we have a coordinated and cooperative planning process with other planning agencies and entities in this area. And so this very first document and all three of these you've seen before, most of them are on agendas currently to be adopted. We've received six being adopted and sent back already. And so what we're looking for item A is to approve the continued collection and consolidation of that and the filing of that document with the clerk of courts once we have received the required signatures.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, very good. B, review and approval of resolution 2014-20 executing the Transportation Planning Funds Joint Participation Agreement.
Motion to approve.
Second, okay, we got that. All right, any further discussion? Lois, did you need to add anything? Okay, anybody, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, motion passes. C, review and approval of Resolution 2014-21, executing the Intergovernmental Coordination and Review Agreement and Public Transportation Coordination Joint Participation Agreements.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second. All right. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. It passes. Okay. D, review and approval of Resolution 2014-22, amending the 2035 Long-Range Transportation Plan for the Expanded Metropolitan Planning Area. All right. Discussion, Lois?
Again, this particular item is required as a part of expanding the organization and including our new members. And it was developed with the same information that we used to develop our basic long-range plan, because DOT does assist in areas that there is not an NPO. So in this particular instance, we were able to use the same modeling information and the same financial forecasting. And we worked closely with the folks of Palm Coast, Pinellas, and Flagler County to develop this amendment. It was presented in September. We've done all of the public outreach necessary, and we made a few minor updates based on some comments that we had received via DOT review, and we're presenting that again for approval.
Okay, motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
A second. Any further discussion? Lee?
Lois, will this fit in to the priority plan, or will this just be separate?
It will. These, as you know, become the long-range plan is the document to which we pull projects from when we create the priority list, and you will see on the priority list that are being presented as a draft, those projects are merged into the priority process.
Okay, any other questions or discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, it passes. E is the review and approval of Resolution 2014-23, amending the 2013 to 2018 Transportation Improvement Program for the Expanded Metropolitan Planning Area.
Again, the TIP is the five-year document, so we have the umbrella document, the long-range plan, and then we pull projects into the Transportation Improvement Program as they are funded. We have merged all of the projects that are included in the planning area into our existing TIP, and then later when you look at the TIP that will cover the next five-year period, we've also done that for that document. So this is just an amendment to the existing TIP to make sure that all of the projects are included and that there is no hesitation or delay or interruption of any projects because they are not in an adopted TIP.
Motion to approve.
Second. Okay, and a second. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, we go on to F, review and approval of Resolution 2014-24, adopting the River to Sea TPO bylaws.
Again, this the draft bylaws were actually developed and approved in August of last year. We're just bringing them back as a reminder that they will begin to take effect as soon as we file, and so we're just looking for a confirmation again that we are using these bylaws. They have not changed since they were adopted originally.
Okay, motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, G is the review and approval of River to Sea TPO Title VI Program and Limited English Proficiency Access Plan.
These two documents really focus on making sure that we are not discriminating and that we, against any particular groups, that there is a process in place for somebody to file a complaint if they feel like they have not been had access to our programs, and that we will try to identify any groups that might have limited English language proficiency so that we can accommodate them and be sure that anyone that wants to participate in this process has the opportunity to do so. Again, that requires sort of a demographic analysis, which we have done for the expanded planning area, and we've modified those documents to ensure that they reflect that expanded population.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All right, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. We go on to review and approval of the draft of 2014-2015 River to Sea TPO budget. And as this is a public hearing, Lois, I guess you talk first and then we'll see if anyone has comments.
Actually, the public hearing comes up for the next item, the TIP. Okay. The budget itself was presented at the May meeting, and there has been no changes. There haven't been any comments or questions on any of the information that have been presented, and so we're bringing it back around to be approved as the budget that will guide us in 2014-15.
Motion to approve.
Second. All right, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Who was the second?
The second, Rob, oh, Pat.
Oh, I don't care.
It was so.
I was the motion.
All right, Rob gave the motion, and I guess Pat gave the second. All right. Okay, the next one is review and approval of resolution 2014-25 adopting the 2014 to 2019 transportation improvement program. And this is where we have the public hearing. Does anyone in the public wish to speak? Okay, seeing no one, we'll come back to Lois with an explanation.
Again, the Transportation Improvement Program is kind of a document that rolls each year, and as we develop our priority lists, we give those to the Department of Transportation. They develop a work program. When that work program of projects is approved, then we pull that information typically into our TIP. So this will be the five-year TIP that covers fiscal year 14-15, which is about to begin, through 18-19. And some major projects and activities that were introduced into the TIP is right-of-way funding for the sixth laning of Clyde Morris, which has been a project on our priority list for a while. Right-of-way funding for the sixth laning of ISB just to the west here, from Tomoka Farms Road out to the I-4 flyover. There was a pedestrian safety improvement here on ISB from Williamson to Midway that includes an overpass, as well as the interchange, the advancement of the I-4 US 92 systems interchange. So again, a lot of good and exciting projects moving forward and into the state.
Okay, do we have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. J, review and approval of the draft 2040 long-range transportation plan, public involvement plan. Lois?
A presentation was given at last month's meeting on the public outreach activities for the long-range plan. This is a large part of what we do and will do over the course of the next year and a half. Public outreach is extremely important, not only for the development of the long-range plan, but we'll be taking some special care to reach out to folks in the expanded areas that we have not historically gotten involved with. And so we'll be looking to our new partners to help us reach out to their communities. A big component of this also is making sure that we specifically target underserved populations, people who are not always accustomed to having a voice, but who are very impacted by the decisions that we make. And so there are efforts as a part of this plan to reach out to those populations. As we move through the process, of course, if any members feel like we need to pay special attention to groups in areas that you serve or groups that perhaps we haven't reached out to, this is always a very flexible document and process that we move forward with. So this is the plan that guides us at the start, but I'm sure that we will be flexible over the next year and a half to make sure that we're reaching out to as many people as we can to help craft the long-range plan and vision.
Okay, do we have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Okay, second. All right, with Tony. All right, any questions or discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, amazing. We went through that. Presentations. All right, now we have presentation A on the draft River to Sea TPO priority project list to begin public review period.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I mentioned earlier, there's a process that we use each year to send and communicate to the Department of Transportation what our priorities are for this planning area and how we would like them to direct funding that may become available. And we do that by developing a series of priority lists. And we do that in part because we get to compare apples to apples, and funding typically comes in certain categories. Some of those projects, again, the major capital projects, come directly from our long-range plan. And then some of those projects are applications that we receive each year from our local member governments to fund smaller projects. There are seven priority lists that we have historically used, and this year we're adding an additional one, and that's the regional trails list. And we did that, again, to be flexible and to be responsive to things that are happening at the state level. You may remember that as a part of the last legislative session, a bill was passed that allows flexibility in the State Transportation Trust Fund to use that money towards trail funding. And in doing that, the likelihood of some more ambitious trail funding is certainly there, and we want to make sure that we're being responsive to that and that we're well positioned to take advantage of that. So where we are in the process is the subcommittee has gone through these lists. They have reviewed and ranked all of the projects. We've developed draft lists for your review. Pending today's meeting, we'll make those lists available for public review, and then we'll bring them back again either in August or September and look for approval. They have to be submitted to the Department of Transportation at the beginning of October. So again, we have two more meetings that give us an opportunity to go through the lists. And I'd like to go ahead and just briefly walk through the lists because there are such significant changes. Two versions of the list were included in your package, a strike-through version that helps you see what changed from last year's priority list, projects that have been added, projects that have either been withdrawn or funded and moved along and moving along through different parts of and tiers of our list. The first set of projects is the strategic intermodal system, and that begins on page 111. There's also a set of clean copies without all the strike-throughs, and that ultimately will be what we share with the public. On page 111, you see the strike-through version of the strategic intermodal system, and you see that the Matanzas Woods Interchange project has been added. That's a result of the expanding planning area. And then two projects are going away because they've been funded. Again, good news, not only funded, but they're under contract or will quickly be under contract. The next set of projects is the regionally significant non-CIS. Now, these are the projects that also come from our long-range plan. These are major capital improvement projects that we undertake in the area to address congestion issues and mobility issues. And again, what you'll see here are projects taken out that have moved under contract and are under construction or completed, and then projects from the expanded planning area have been factored in. And we did work with the staff of Flagler and Palm Coast to go ahead and introduce these projects that come from the expanded and amended long-range transportation plan. The strategy that we used in incorporating these projects was a combination of where they stand in terms of their current funding. If they're funded for design and right-of-way above a they would be placed above a project that has not had any funding allocated to it. Again,
again, to keep the momentum of that project moving forward. We also used the timing of funding in the long-range plan as it was forecasted. So again, a project that wasn't expected to be funded until 2035 would move further down on the list.
Excuse me.
Oh, yes. Sorry, Deb.
Thank you. Lois, can you explain to me or just update me? It says Park Avenue is the only intersection of the seven not yet funded in number one?
Yes.
Okay. How do we go about getting that funded, and what are the odds? Where are we with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. We will be working with DOT this year as they develop the work program and prior to that to make sure that we understand what the holdup is with that, whether there's a design change or some other issue that's affected that project from moving forward.
Would it be, is my microphone on, I guess? Would it be helpful in that particular situation if there was collaboration between the county and the city on improving that area, Park Avenue, maybe an intersection down there? Would that help the funding?
The stronger case that we can make in terms of explaining the importance of this to DOT, the better off we are. I know that the city has been working closely with the county on the other end of Park Avenue.
True.
To address issues there. And so certainly if we need some assistance, we will certainly turn to the county for help as well.
Okay, I just for a matter of comment to throw up a red flag there, I'm going to see what we can do to expedite that and get that funded. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, all right.
Okay, so I'll move on to the traffic operations and ITS safety. What I'm moving into now are the lists of projects that are typically smaller projects, and they are funded through the set-aside that we get at the River to Sea TPO because we are a TPO of a certain size. And we get a little over $5 million a year that we can allocate however this TPO chooses to. And the current policy, as it has been for many, many years, is to allocate 40% to ITS traffic ops and safety improvements. These are, again, small improvements that help increase the efficiency of our system or address safety issues that haven't been addressed otherwise. We allocate 30% to bicycle and pedestrian projects, including trail projects, and then another 30% goes to public transit. Each of these, the bicycle and pedestrian and the ITS traffic ops, have a series of steps that those projects work through. The first is you submit an application for a feasibility study, or you do a feasibility study on your own. Either way, that helps develop the project, ready the project. It nails down the costs and the details of that project. Then it moves into the next tier, which is Tier B, which are all the projects that we have good cost estimates and project concept plans for, and they are ready to be funded. And then once funding starts to occur, it moves into Tier A, which are the highest priority projects in each of those categories that have some funding allocated, and we're looking to keep them at the top of the list until they're complete. So again, in the Tier A, you see projects that have been funded in some manner. I would call your attention if we move into Tier B, those are the projects that are awaiting funding, and I would just call your attention to what is item 4 on the list at this point. It moved up from item 10 last year, Old New York Avenue paved shoulders. And if you look under the estimated total project cost, you'll see that project is estimated at $2,999,342. So it's pushing right the limit of the cap that we have established by policy for these types of projects. I bring that up only because that doesn't often happen. That cap is not hard and fast, but it's our obligation to let you know when a project is close. Again, always an opportunity to waive that or to forego that to complete a project.
I'd also want to call your attention on the Tier C listing, which for the strike-through version is on page 121 of your agenda packet. There are two projects on the Tier C that we discussed at both the TCC and CAC. They're not typical projects that would be entered into a set-aside program like this, and they are the roundabouts on US 92. They are items 7 and 8. A roundabout at A1A and a roundabout at Peninsula Drive. And the reason I bring those projects up is they are currently being studied by the city, so they aren't really looking for feasibility study. They have a feasibility study underway, so they're reflected on the list for that reason. But some preliminary estimates on an entire package of roundabouts estimated the cost somewhere above $50 million. So if we just simply divide them by three, then we're talking about, you know, $15 million each. Now, roundabouts vary depending on the size of the roundabout, how much right-of-way is needed. So those are really, really ballpark estimates. But even with a lot of flexibility, it's hard for me to imagine how those projects would ever get downsized to a point of fitting the funding cap for this particular category of projects. And so,
Lois, if I could jump in on this one.
Okay.
So, you know, in Daytona, obviously we've got a few billion dollars worth of investment going on right now, and we're recognizing that the current infrastructure to get people, particularly to the beach side, to the Ocean Center, to the Hard Rock, to the Proto Group, the Russian Hotel, we know the Desert Inn is undergoing a renovation to become Westin. You know, currently what we're gonna have some problems getting people, moving people back and forth, particularly once you get to A1A and on ISB. So this has been, is being sort of evaluated. We've got a lot of pedestrian concerns because roundabouts are not very friendly to pedestrians, particularly those that are visually impaired. So we're trying to determine how to fit into this, you know, probably signal pedestrian crosswalks. You know, it's still very early in the planning, but we're trying to make sure that we recognize and give credit to the fact that we've got a significant issue that's coming in a few years. And we putting this on this list was really kind of a first, you know, it is a traffic issue. You know, we're trying to figure out how to move people back and forth through that area better than what we've got right now with just signaled intersections. As a matter of fact, this is down to two because we dropped the US 1 component, correct?
It wasn't submitted. I don't know that this city has made a determination.
US 1 was being contemplated as well. This is it's a moving target right now. But what we're trying to do is figure out where's the most appropriate place to put it. We think the LRTP is actually probably the most reasonable place because of the volume. Most of that cost is related to right-of-way acquisition, but you know, for now, it seems like the best place to put it would be either on this list or to create a list not dissimilar from like the Basco Bridge list. That's these high-dollar separate lists that, but so that the project is recognized and known, so that somehow in a couple years some funding becomes available, that it's on a TPO list that will allow it to be able to be considered. Because without it being there, it can't be considered at all. So we're not, you know, this isn't Daytona trying to pull a fast one or anything. I want to make sure everybody understands kind of where we are. There's a problem, and we're trying to formulate a solution right now. But if we don't take an action and start moving it in a direction, we're going to be idle forever. So, you know, I know this was discussed at the TCC. Personally, I think that leaving it on the Tier C list, which is way down there, isn't the worst thing in the world. However, it probably would make more sense in the future to kind of create a separate list for these high-dollar things and move it off of this and into that, you know, that consideration.
And certainly in terms of the development of this project, it is in the appropriate place. That's what feasibility studies do. They nail down concepts. The recommendation out of the CAC was we need some guidance. The recommendation out of the TCC was, as Commissioner Gilliland mentioned, create a separate list. And we have been talking about this very concept as we talk about the long-range plan. And when, as we completed the corridor improvement programs, and we recognized that there's a movement afoot, not just in this area but elsewhere, to create complete streets. It goes back and it changes the design and the profile of a street so that it operates more efficiently and so that it meets the needs of the area. Those are really expensive projects. They're not traditional capacity projects. How do we address the costs associated with something like a complete streets or introduction of a roundabout when it does have an improvement, but it's more of a traffic ops improvement and it creates a different environment, in a lot of cases, a more walkable environment. It's creating some other economic development incentives and things like that that are not the traditional major capacity improvements. And so the TCC recommendation is let's have a separate list that addresses those sorts of projects.
Okay. My question would be, who determines it makes it more efficient, having lived in an area where roundabouts were everywhere in England and predominantly worked in the rural areas or outside of the metro areas? You don't see them in downtown London. When you place talk about making them more efficient, that's a subjective term. I would question that they would make it more efficient.
Well, and the feasibility studies.
I'm not asking for a debate. I don't want to debate this, but I do hope that this is addressed in the future before you go out and try to spend $16-17 million to put a roundabout, thinking that it's going to make it more efficient in moving traffic, especially when you're looking at A1A and ISB right there, when you're going to have a three-way, you're only going to have three ways. I've driven the roundabout in Paris at the Arc de Triomphe. There's six lanes or eight lanes going to 8 or 12 different exits. And if you get on the inside, you're stuck there for a couple of days till you can get out the exit. But in the meantime, you can have some wine and cheese in your car and be happy and go on your roundabout. But I just questioned it because we've looked at it in the past, and the, quote, experts, those that they, to try and find out who they are, say it makes it more efficient. I question it. That's just my point, because I won't be here when it comes up for a vote.
And okay, Josh. All right, Josh is next.
I think everyone, it seems kind of silly, but that show Mythbusters, if you ever watch it, you should Google Mythbusters and do roundabout, and they actually do a really good job of setting up roundabouts and actually going through the whole process. And you'll watch it, and it's in fast play. You'll be blown away at how well they work. They absolutely blow away signals. It's not even there's no comparison to how efficient they are. In a real practical situation, and you look at it. But I do want to mention that I think part of the problem with A1A, and it's more of a state road, is that we've also let A1A get too fast. I drive it every morning. A1A was better when it was slower, and it was better when we pushed people to Ridgewood. If you're traveling that far distance, it was better when people went to Ridgewood Avenue when I was a kid. And you'd see, I'm not blaming it, all the businesses have been hurt on A1A, but we've turned A1A into a highway. And I don't think it's the proper way of what A1A should be for the future of Daytona Beach and all of our areas going down. And I think they need to consider putting parking on A1A on the east side of the road. So it's just another thing we should be thinking about.
Okay.
And, you know, to address Mayor Kelly's comments, you know, I'm pretty skeptical myself. And I'm the city's representative that's kind of sitting in the planning meetings. And they've convinced me to a certain extent that it's not the worst idea in the world, but that's about where we are right now. But that's where the feasibility study is. And honestly, I think one of the rules here should be that if we're gonna have a separate list for big projects like this, that they're not eligible for feasibility study funding. That it's on the obligation of the parties. You know, that's why we're paying for this, because if we're headed down a rabbit hole, we're not going to drag all you guys with us. We may get to the end of this and say this was a terrible idea. But, you know, ultimately, we know we have a problem and we've got to fix it. This is the solution we're discussing right now. That doesn't mean this is the one we're going to end up with. But today, this is looking like something that has worked in some other communities. But, you know, slowing down A1A is a big part of this. You can't put pedestrian crosswalks in the middle of, you know, you put them before the roundabout. And people aren't accustomed to them being there. And if you've got a speed limit, what we've got right now, that may not work either. There's a lot of ways this may unravel, but we've got to get started someplace. And this is sort of the direction that we're headed today. But I would not be surprised if we ended up with a totally different solution, you know, once we get to the end of this path.
Lee?
In places the roundabouts do work, you go to Clearwater Beach, it's pretty much the same of what you're looking at, the main road coming in and splitting onto 1998 right down there, and they used to have traffic lights, and it was a total mess, and they've got a huge gateway, actually, roundabout that does, you know, that does work. But I think there's two things here, and I agree, Rob. I mean, we're all looking in areas to do some really major projects that may not fit, that may be a little ways down, and I think if we do look at creating another list, it'll give everybody an opportunity, one, to make everybody aware of what the areas are looking to do, and two, kind of put a placeholder there so it is no surprise to anybody, and we can keep that discussion going. So I would certainly be in favor of looking at a large project list, so to speak, that, again, may change, but that information is out there that everybody knows about.
Okay, Pat?
I'm not going to weigh in on whether the roundabouts are the right thing or not, but I can tell you that I think it's important that we look at a safety study along A1A that is not just Daytona, but goes the whole roadway in the Halifax area. I had the opportunity to drive that with a representative of the group that wants to do the Weston, and when you're actually looking at what we have along A1A and the, you know, it's safety improvements, the pedestrian crossings, there's a myriad of different kinds of pedestrian crossings. Some work, I watched people running across A1A that looked like they were running for their life. There are great stretches of that roadway that do not have any pedestrian crossing. I agree with my colleague, we need to slow it down, and we need to do something that changes that. I mean, it's that road is wide open, and it is, and if we're a tourist community on the beach side, then we need to be responsible, and we need to do something that's responsible and take care of those tourists. And so for me, any project that we move would need to be multidimensional, and it would need to be including more than just one city. I mean, I want something broader. I want to look at something broader.
Hey, Josh?
I just have a general question about this. That's something that, as we have these beach driving issues, and we have these things coming out, and I pray for the family of the kids last night that had experienced that. It's two blocks from my house, and that has nothing to do with beach driving, and I've already gotten emails on it, so it really doesn't. That would have happened if they were beach driving or not, but it's horrible. But the bigger discussion, how do we do that in the TPO? Of having ideas, say an idea being thrown out of having parking on the east side of A1A. How does that fit into TPO? Do I just bring that up at the end of the meeting and say, hey, can we have a general discussion with, I mean, it's a state road, so how does that fit in?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what your question is. Parking specifically or A1A
well,
it would
change the whole road.
General?
A1A as a corridor in general, because right now we've set up A1A as far as the state, and I understand it's an evacuation route, so I understand there are things that we have. But where is the proper discussion for that? I know it's not now. My question is simply, when is it?
But the point is well taken, and Councilmember Northey's point as well. You may recall that a few years ago we set aside some of our SU funding, that funding that comes to an MPO, to do corridor improvement studies, and we started with US 1 and with 1792, and the Department of Transportation did a phase two to US 1, which will be coming back in August for presentation to this board, to specifically look at issues along those roadways to make sure that we understood what the needs of the community were so that we can give the community and DOT can give the community the road that they need to function in the way that they need it to function, to support the businesses, to support pedestrian activity. But we need to understand, really, to do that well, the road shouldn't drive that, no pun intended. The community should dictate what the road needs to be. And it would be the same for A1A. Now, there was a corridor study done on A1A, again, probably a dozen years ago. And anything done more than a decade ago, even though it takes a long time to develop ambitious transportation projects, you know, the way we planned and what our focus and emphasis were, and certainly the economic development that's going on today, is different than it was a decade ago, more than a decade ago. And so you figure that study started at least 15 years ago. So coming back and looking at that corridor again is something we certainly could do if the board wants to continue the corridor improvement program. And the advantage to that is, you know, we don't get enough planning funds really to fund those programs. DOT gets some planning funds, but when we get to allocate planning dollars for studies, we get to manage them. No offense to our friends at DOT, they do a wonderful job, but their focus tends to be a little bit different than our focus. And so if there was a desire to look at A1A, and I would just use that as my segue into looking at another request that was here in the ITS Traffic Ops, for looking at a series of intersections along Beltaire Parkway. That's really more of a corridor study. It's not to say that that project doesn't have merit and need to be done, but generally this program would look at an intersection and do a traffic lane improvement at a single intersection. When you start looking at a series of intersections, that's more like the US 1 project that's been in our long range plan. That's a corridor. And so if there's a desire to be able to fund that project as well as something like a corridor study on A1A that had a focus on pedestrian activity and safety, then I would recommend that we continue with the CIP program and we set aside some of our SU dollars and fund those programs and work with the community to develop the scope of services as we've done with the other two and go ahead and proceed forward.
Then what I'll probably do is at the end of the meeting, I'll bring it up to support it, see if there's support at that time, make a motion to put it on the agenda for discussion. I suppose that's the right way to do it.
Yeah, we'd bring it back at the next meeting and take formal action.
I'll do that at the end of the meeting. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And following up on that, for the like the corridor improvement programs, you know, it wasn't like a city came forward with that. It was a group of cities who were affected. So how was that brought to the TPO?
Same thing. It was a discussion. It sort of grew out of the last long-range plan and the discussion on US 1 and these intersection improvements and how that was this million-dollar study that ended up with some intersection improvements and not a lot else came of it. And we wanted to come back and look at the corridor and say, do they even still apply and how do they apply and how do we
but
make
procedurally,
US 1 function?
The way that it got on to get funding was that it was, are you saying that one, because I know that, you know, Daytona and some of the other cities that are along that corridor that are, you know, planners, managers were involved in discussions about the project, but no one group was the sponsor that, you know, that applied to the TPO to get it on a list. So did it sort of like start really with the staff of the affected communities that really brought it to the TPO or worked with the TPO to say this is something you want to move forward with?
The conversation started that way. It came as a recommendation from TPO staff to go ahead and manage the corridor studies and to use that set aside to go ahead and fund them.
So if Josh doesn't object, I would say we just move forward with communicating with managers in the communities along, you know, from Ormond on down and talk to them about moving forward with this. We don't meet in July. We're talking about going into August. Then we're going to talk about then saying, get together with the managers or the TCC reps or whoever it may be about getting, you know, a scope put together for moving forward with this. But really, to me, CORP is going to be a safety improvement corridor, you know, a corridor safety improvement program for A1A.
I'm not one to slow things down, so, yeah. I'm with it. I'm there. So whatever we need to do, I'm on board.
I mean, I would prefer that those discussions start and maybe we bring back a presentation in August about what happened with those discussions.
And
the county needs to involve that as well.
We can certainly do that. And if we need to formalize the funding piece, do that. I mentioned the Department of Transportation gets funding dollars as well for planning, and we work with them to try and outline the projects that they're going to do, the projects we're going to do, and then projects that we can partner on. And because of different contracting rules, we've been somewhat limited in the partnering, and hopefully we've made some changes to address that so that we can continue to work more closely. When it comes to the roundabouts, I just wanted to be clear. I'm not taking a position on the roundabouts. There's feasibility studies and analysis underway. This is, and my focus is just on process and making sure that we're following a process that is working.
Okay, Pat?
Yeah, I just, I think we can, Rob, you're on the executive committee, and I think maybe we can have a more robust discussion there about the process and how we do it. If there's interest in doing something that is more than just one city-wide issue, that's what's interesting to me. I think it's got to be the whole corridor that we're looking at, not just part of the corridor. And I know that one of the comments that was made to me was, well, that FDOT would probably be one of the problems, and I haven't found that to be the case at all. And they're certainly funding some safety improvements on US 92 to the tune of, what, about $20 million in front of the Speedway. So I think that they're committed to doing safety improvements.
Hey, Josh?
I think two of us both raised our cards to do the same things. I think it should be all coastal roads.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, I have parts of my district that are not A1A. It's Atlantic Avenue. So I think when we're talking about the corridor study, it needs to be from Flagler line all the way down into obviously Smyrna, going around Ponce, you know, make the jump. They all need to be part of that conversation because that's part of the board.
Yeah, I think for me the priority on this one right now, because I think New Smyrna has done some stuff. We certainly should include them, but clearly the Halifax area is where there's a lot of redevelopment happening, and as part of the redevelopment, we need to be sure that whether it's A1A or whatever we call it, Atlantic Avenue, is what we're really focusing on, and Flagler certainly down to, because I was up in Flagler the other day, and you all had some issues up there with people crossing crazy, too. So.
Well, I guess the question is now, the way our TPO has changed, that is part of the conversation. We are Flagler, so I don't know how the funding process works and what Flagler's position is, but
yeah, I don't know.
They're part of this corridor, as far as
Adam,
I know.
Chair,
yes,
Josh
sir.
Was facing you.
Oh.
We have no
all right. Well, you all of you better? Speak into the mic.
Big, can you hear me now? Is it better? Okay. I guess now that Flagler is part of this TPO, that's part of the discussion as well.
Right.
So we need to have that. We need to have that consideration.
Well, Marshall's on the executive committee for Flagler Beach, and I think after all this stuff we did today, we will be adding Flagler County as sitting on this as well. Correct. They'll be sitting at the table.
Yes.
Next meeting.
They have been sitting at the table.
Yeah. I haven't seen her lately. Where?
Where she was.
Oh.
Commissioner Revels has been attending a number of meetings. I'm not sure.
Okay. Jason, did you have anything to add? Okay.
Nothing other than what Josh just said. New Smyrna should be included, all the communities coastal, and this is a great idea. I'd certainly like to support it.
Okay. Rob, did you have anything more? Okay, any other comment?
Thank you.
All right. Okay. It'll be brought up at the end of the meeting, I guess, is the way.
Do we need to bring it up?
Or do we need to bring it up again, or shall we?
I think I'm pretty clear.
The executive.
I just want to make sure, in terms of the recommendation from the TCC and the question about roundabouts and complete streets type projects, is there a desire to have a separate list? Leave it on this list, that changes the process. We didn't have a separate list that all communities applied for, so there's certainly a sort of a downside to doing that midstream in a process. We could introduce that next year as we go through the call.
So just leave it on this list for now, and when we create another list, then we'll just move it from this list to that list. But I still think that we ought to, in the next 2 months until we meet again, begin the dialogue with, you know, one of the first things, you know, New Smyrna brought up a great point that, you know, Jason, that they've got things that they're doing down there. One of the first, with the corridor improvement program, one of the first things you do is collect all the feasibility studies from all the affected communities. So, I mean, I would go to the managers and the planning directors and start amassing that repository so that we can, you know, get the ball rolling. I mean, sitting on our hands for 2 months and waiting to say you know, let's talk about it, then it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I don't hear anybody at this table saying we don't have an issue today that's only probably going to get worse when we see more development, more density over the beach side. Mm-hmm.
Well, then for purposes of doing exactly that and taking it around to the different cities and their staff, would it be helpful if we had a motion from this board that formalized that this idea so that the staffs understand that this is coming from the board?
I think we can do that because it wasn't an agenda item.
Oh, you're right.
What we'll do is we'll go ahead and start that discussion, and then we'll come back and have the conversation through the executive committee, but have an action item on next month's agenda for how that gets funded, what the level probably needs to be, but certainly we can put that in motion at this point.
All right, any other comments or questions?
Just one. I'm not against roundabouts. I didn't want anyone to say that I was. Just a certain location, I think it would work better. I think it would be a no-brainer if you put one at ISB and US 1. You've got adequate space. That would be, you don't need to do a study on that. You just need to do it. It would work because you eliminate all the left turn, right turn lanes. You've got adequate space for two lanes, and it would work there fantastic. But that's just
actually.
So you can charge me a consulting fee on that one.
Actually, that's
and Josh is representing me on that.
That's the big right-of-way acquisition piece, because to get a semi around that roundabout, you don't have enough space.
You wouldn't need any acquisition.
Yeah, actually, you got to take that hotel that's on the corner. Yeah, it's, trust me, it, we're very early on.
That hotel, that's my law partner, and I refuse to get involved in that.
So
that's
it's,
why he's representing me.
We're working on it, Ed.
All right, we definitely need to work on it. Okay, any other comments? All right, we'll move on to presentation of update to the draft River to Sea TPO purchasing manual. Oh, yes.
I thought she was going to go through the rest of the...
Oh, did I cut you off?
The rest of the list, because we've still got bridges, and I wanted
right,
to talk
Lois.
A little bit about the trails. Sorry.
Right. Lois, can you finish your presentation, please?
Sorry.
Well, I really didn't expect to say a whole lot else except what Councilman Matizic just brought up, which is the new trail list. And that really came out of the fact that the Central Florida MPO Alliance, that's all of the MPOs in Central Florida, have begun creating regional lists. And one of them is a regional trails list. And the reason for that is, again, that language in the last legislative session that was passed has to do with setting aside funding for regional trails, and those are the regional trails that are defined by the Office of Greenways and Trails. So we want to make sure that we have our trails designated, and when they go through an expansion process or a review for designating those trails, that we make sure that we're designating the ones that we consider regionally significant on that list so that they are eligible for that funding. And again, the Central Florida MPO Alliance list, also there was a commitment made by the Department of Transportation in this district to use all of their transportation alternatives dollars to fund projects on those lists, which was huge because that's what helped fund the two segments of the East Central Florida Rail Trail here in Volusia County to the tune of almost $10 million. So that's, again, very significant. That being said, we do have a trail list, a regional trail list that has been added for this year. I would remind you we are also going through, as a part of that corridor improvement CIP program, a regional trail assessment so that we can make sure that we identify all of the segments that exist that maybe are or are not designated yet, that we get them designated so that they'll be eligible for funding, and that we understand the status so that we can tell the story of trail development in this area and, again, access funding. So I would expect this list to grow next year as a result of that particular project. That's really all that I needed to mention at this point.
Lee.
A couple things, and I just wanted clarification because we talk about it and then can't remember exactly where we ended up. The segment on 17 from Deline Springs up to 40, that was designated within the project that there would be a trail that DOT is working on in conjunction with that project from Deline Springs to 40.
There was not originally, but we have had meetings with the department, and I actually was going to bring this up under the executive director's report, but we did have meetings with the department where we made that clear. They have stopped or gone back to reassess the right-of-way needs for that project because, of course, building a trail would extend the right-of-way requirements, and the right-of-way is currently in the work program, funded in the work program. So they're going back and looking at that. What they need from Volusia County is a maintenance agreement, and I know the county has staff has been working with DOT to get that maintenance agreement in place. What the department has asked from us is that we provide clarity that that is supported by the TPO. And we have had that discussion in prior meetings, but we've never actually taken an action. And so I was going to ask for direction from this group to go ahead and confirm with the DOT that this TPO does support the trail as a portion, as a part of that US 17 widening project. Likewise, there's been a discussion about 40. State Road 40 and a trail, which we've been clear about as well, but there was a question about the bridge over the Tomoka River and making a trail either a separate trail bridge or a part of the widening project and a part of the existing bridge. And my discussions with county staff is that we would like that to, or they would like that to be a part of the existing bridge, so that they don't have to do separate bridge inspection, and it is funded and maintained by DOT as a part of the bridge itself.
But what I don't see in here, there is that gap. No matter what they do up until the end of the four lane where it is now and where the four lane is gonna start, there's about a mile or two gap on that trail that's already on the north side. I don't see, and I know Pat and I have talked about that, to have a continuation of that whole trail, because it's kind of silly to put the trail on 40 where they're looking at widening it and still leave that gap, because that's going to put people on that paved shoulder going over. My vision is, you know, 17 to come up to 40, 40 come down and around so you can go to Ormond and complete that loop. But there's still, and what is it? Do you remember, Lois, it's about 2 miles, 3 miles that there will be that gap. And I think somehow we need to get that gap on here to connect both of those. And it can't be a whole lot of, I mean, I'm sure it's a great deal of money, but it needs that connection, and it needs to get on the list to make sure that that's done.
The regional trail assessment includes looking at a trail on State Road 40 across the county and actually up to the county line, because we've been approached by the folks in our neighboring county about making that connection because they're interested in a trail in the Ocala area. So we're having that coordination, and my thinking was this would all be fleshed out more clearly as a part of the trail regional assessment CIP.
I just don't want that segment.
A 3 month project.
I don't want that segment forgotten about, because if you're looking at the whole corridor, you're going to see that all the way up through Ormond that's done. And you'll see where the other part of that project from 40 is going to come. And Stephen, do you know how much that gap is there on 40?
That was, thank you for the clarification on the regional, I call it the missing link study. So I think that Lee's comments are pertinent, and that needs to be part of it. And I understand from you that it is going to be.
Yes, it is.
Okay, the piece on the bridge on 40, that's new information to me. The staff has not talked to anybody that I'm aware of on what the elected official's preference is. We have on 415, I don't know if you've seen 415, but there is a separated trail on 415 with a separated bridge. So I'm going to follow up on that because
okay.
I've not heard that before, that we had a preference on the on a particular.
I wouldn't want to put them back on 40.
I don't want to
That's
put them back on
thing.
40. Exactly. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Especially at Timber Creek where
yeah.
there's all that congestion
yeah.
there anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had recently confirmed that with John and Julie that
That's
staff is
amazing.
Supportive of construction of a trail bridge as part of the widening of the existing bridge rather than a new trail bridge structure. But if that's not the case, then we'll hold off on communicating.
Could we hold off on that?
Okay, any more questions? And Lois, any other comments on this issue?
No, that completes my presentation.
All right, and then I already announced it, but the River to Sea TPO purchasing manual. You want to give us a breakdown on that?
This is the document that guides how we procure all services. And we don't have access to a procurement department. And so we utilize our attorney and lean heavily on a document like this. And so we wanted to update it and make some improvements, which is primarily what the draft purchasing manual does. It improves the clarity, the formatting. It outlines more clearly staff responsibilities and roles. What I want to be clear is we didn't change any approval thresholds. So the approval process and the funding thresholds are still all the same. We added and defined words. We, again, just tried to format it in a way that made more sense for us. What we did clarify and worked through the executive committee is the maximum length of continuing services contracts. So those are capped at no more than 5 years. It can be a 3-year base with 2 1-year renewals, but not to exceed 5 years. We've also added some clarification regarding the donation or disposal of excess or surplus goods, computers, printers, things that we're no longer using, tables and chairs, that they can be donated to a nonprofit or sold. Since they're such small quantities, it's not like when the county's accessing items where they can access large lots, we will access a computer that's 4 years old. There's generally very little market value, but there are programs out there like Volusia County Schools where they take those equipment, or the Boys and Girls Club. So again, we defined that. And we also had a discussion, and we are currently attempting to address local presence, or we've called it preference, but the law and legal references call it presence. And we have, through previous discussions with Federal Highway and DOT, been with the understanding that we weren't able to have a local presence in our selection process. But in digging into this a little bit, the law is pretty ambiguous. It discourages it. We cannot have a policy for it. But on a case-by-case basis and under limited circumstances and when we can really defend the reasons, we can. So it stops short of saying no. But the bar is set very, very high. And so we're going to be coming back to the executive committee to talk about that in a little more detail and decide, make a determination whether we want to try to go down that road and consider some sort of an opening for that or not. Again, we want to have some conversations with Federal Highway as well so that we don't put ourselves in a difficult position during our next certification review. So that's where we stand with the purchasing manual. It's available online if any of you are interested in that sort of thing, and hopefully we'll be bringing it back at the next meeting with a final
documents for approval.
Okay, any questions for Lois? All right, we go to the DOT report. Claudia?
Good morning, Claudia Calzaretta, FDOT. There are no new construction projects to report on, but I will take any comments or questions you may have.
Lee?
Claudia, there was an email in reference to a subject that I brought up in reference to the CSX freight delivering in on the industrial corridor, but in a residential neighborhood. That email addressed everything that I had explained. What wasn't answered was the time and the issue. If you recall, our problem in there is the freight trains coming in at midnight, delivering freight, and blowing the horn whistle 20 times for the train to come down, turn around, because a lot of those crossings there are dark. So the information that you gave me was what I had given you. The problem is the timing that's coming through of the freight in the residential area. That's where I was hoping that conversation would come between DOT, CSX, and the City of DeLand to see what we could do in that residential corridor.
Through my research, I found that area, that spur, is not the DOT's jurisdiction. So we can't mandate what the CSX does on that area.
But DOT has caused the issue with SunRail to move that freight. So the freight is coming off of the main line that DOT does have jurisdiction over, that's sending it into the residential neighborhood. So I don't know if there's way we can put a meeting together or what with the city and DOT and CSX to see what we can come up with to solve that, because you know, right now at 4 and 5 times a week, at anywhere from 10 to 2 in the morning, it's a little disturbing to the residents there. And they understand that that's an industrial area and that corridor's been there, but the corridor has not been active like that until SunRail came in effect and changed the freight hours.
I'll look into it.
Joyce?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a discussion about I-4 construction, and you were going to let us know if the dates are still good. When will we be completed? What's the status on that construction project at this time?
Everything's on schedule. I thought I had sent an email. I thought you had also mentioned that things were escalated forward in time, and that was not the case. I reached out to the PM, and I sent an email that everything's on schedule.
And the day of completion, I didn't get that.
I'd have to look at that. I don't recollect at the moment at the actual end date, but I'll research that email. Fall of 15.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for Claudia? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to the executive director report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, the tell the TPO survey update. We've had about 940 surveys, just over 940 surveys. Thank you to all of you that have helped us get the word out. That's going to run for another month, though, so there is still an opportunity if you have meetings that you're going to be going to, if you'd like some cards to take with you, if you have the opportunity to get that word out, please do. I know I'll be spending a lot more time trying to get the word out, as we don't meet in July, so I'll have a little more time on my hands. To discuss SunRail, I think most of you are aware that the opening of SunRail included 2 weeks of free service. The number of revenue boarding or pre-revenue boardings was pretty significant. The average ridership per day was about 11,000, just over 11,000 boardings, which is tremendous. That has trailed off quite a bit since revenue service started, but we're really sitting closer to 4,000 riders per day, which is right around the projection, maybe a little bit lower than the projection. And I think what that says to all of us is there's still work to do to
make the station accessible, to continue developing and putting in place the transit-oriented development around those stations, and those numbers will certainly grow over time. Just in a presentation recently, they talked about bike boardings, just to let you all know, for those of you that recognize that this is of great interest to the biking community. The average daily boardings for bicycles is 177 bikes being brought on a day, which is pretty significant. Phase 2 South, if you weren't aware, which heads down to Kissimmee, was funded and included in the president's budget that was released on March 4th. And they're looking to have a full funding grant agreement submitted in fall of 2014. DOT has been purchasing the right-of-way, and currently they have 13 of 14 parcels purchased. So again, they're moving forward with the extension of SunRail into the Kissimmee area. Phase 2 North, there was a project development application that was approved by FTA in December of this year. Forward momentum continues with that particular project. And I think we discussed the regional trails CIP. That was the selection of the preferred candidate was on the consent agenda today. So we'll be moving forward with a start, a negotiation of the contract and a start of that project. And we're looking for that to take somewhere between 90 and 120 days. That's okay. All I have, Madam Chair.
All right, any questions for Lois? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to Lee.
No, oh. For the board comments.
Oh, okay, for board comments, we'll start with you.
I would just like to invite everybody on Saturday. We are reopening Earl Brown Park in the Sanborn Center. We've put millions of dollars there into redo our major city park. Ribbon cutting will be at 4 o'clock. We've put an amphitheater in there, a new playground, the Sanborn Center. The old center was torn down, and the new one put in that's going to have seating for 350 people, which on the west side we really don't have anything like that. So 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock are the ribbon cuttings. We also have a rugby match that's going on at that time, and a baseball game and some other things going on there in that area. So please come on down for that ribbon cutting.
Okay, any other member comments?
Madam Chair, this is your final meeting, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Thank God.
It was a heck of a way to go out to do 10 action items in 10 minutes. As far as demonstrating your power, I think you did a great job. Over the last week.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Any other comments? Ron? Oh, sorry.
I have a question for Lois about the resolutions coming in. You alluded to needing 70 or 75% of them in.
In order to record the document and have it become effective, it follows the same as state law, which is 70 representative population of 75% plus the two largest cities, which would be Deltona and Palm Coast.
How close are we coming on that?
I don't anticipate any problems. We have that buffer time not meeting in July, and I expect to have the documents recorded and have everybody at the table and have everything in effect at the August meeting.
The other statement, I received a memorandum from Congressman Micah, said that recently I participated in an exchange with Chairman Tom Latham on the House floor during the consideration of the 2015 Transportation Planning Appropriations Bill. I was successful in gaining support and ensure that Phase 2 of SunRail will not have a problem with the completion of the full funding grant agreement. Never received that?
I did not receive that.
Okay, I'll make sure you got it.
Thank you.
They split up Phase 2 into two sections, north and south. So if in the discussion with Congressman Micah, that was only for that Phase 2 South. They are trying to work on other funding, but
My understanding, it hasn't been completed.
His statement to us was that when he said the word full funding, meant north and south.
Okay, Gene?
Just wanted to let you know that if you're looking for a fun day on the river, Edgewater on the 4th of July is having a fun in the park kind of event, which will take place during the day with food and vendors and that kind of thing. And then in the evening, one great fireworks display. So y'all come on down.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second. All right.